the bottom line definition I came up with in the book for anxiety is that anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and an underestimation of herself. And so if you pull her out of the thing, that makes the problem bigger and her smaller, rather than I'm going to help you figure it out because you are bigger than your worry, or you're bigger than this thing that you're stuck looping, which is how I talk about it with girls, looping about.
You're listening to the Famous at Home podcast with Dr. Josh and Christy Straub, the podcast formerly known as In This Together.
Kind of like Prince, but not.
We're now in this together, helping you be famous at home so you can thrive on your stage.
Every one of us has a stage, and no matter the stage we show up on, we all feel the stress of work, travel, and just plain busyness. Unfortunately, it's our loved ones under our own roof who often get our leftovers.
But what if we didn't have to choose between work and our family? Research shows the more connected we are to our spouse and kids, the more influence
and fun
we have on our respective stage.
So when your tires hit that driveway, keep in mind, the greatest red carpet you'll ever walk is through your front door.
You are famous at home.
Welcome back to the Famous at Home podcast, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
I wish there was a song, Happy Thanksgiving.
There really are no Thanksgiving songs. No. If you know one, you need to let us know, but I don't really know of any to start
singing. We just move into Christmas real fast.
That is very true. Actually, we've already have done that for most of us. So this week we are enjoying Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. Christy celebrated Canadian Thanksgiving a few weeks ago.
In October, yes.
With your family.
Yes.
And so, and yesterday,
I celebrate both happily.
Hey, let me just say this too. This is a month of celebration. We have celebrated Christy's birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, sweetheart.
Thank you.
And so we, so your birthday was yesterday. Thanksgiving is tomorrow. Here we are on a Wednesday, releasing this podcast, and happy Thanksgiving to you all. I hope you're grateful for you're honing in on the gratitude part, and, yeah. That's all I have about that. Today, we have an amazing episode for you. Sissy Goff, and she's no stranger to this podcast. She and her colleague, David Thomas, have been on multiple occasions. This week, we are talking to Sissy. You will also hear from David here as well. Not today, but here in the next few weeks, we're going to be hearing from Sissy and David, and just honing in. It's that time of year where it's Christmas time, but we're also just honing in on how do we be famous to our kids and how do we show up for our kids. And the thing she's seeing most is an epidemic of anxiety in girls. She just released a book called Raising Worry-Free Girls, and she has an incredible workbook coming out for girls that you can take your girls through, elementary school girls, to help them overcome the scary things in their life, the things that they're fearing the most. And so we're going to have those in the show notes, but this interview was just a really, really good one.
And I think if you're a mom or a dad who has a daughter who maybe is more prone to worry or has been labeled, you know, anxious or has anxiety, this is one of the most, this is the person I would put in your path, and I would highly recommend you follow her and get these books, because these resources, just the way she talks, like I just want you to hear her talk, because it transforms something that feels big and scary, which is ironically what the girls, our girls are struggling with, into something that's like, oh yeah, we are braver and stronger. Like we, worry doesn't get to define us. And actually, sweet daughter, and I'm talking to myself too, actually, you know, mom who struggles with anxiety, we need to face the thing that we're afraid of. And the way she talks about helping our daughters through this, and this honestly would apply to boys as well. If you have a boy who struggles with anxiety, though she focuses specifically with girls,
it also applies to moms. The little girl inside of you,
yeah,
as a mom
who still worries,
or a wife, even if you're not a mom, yeah, it applies to all of us.
Or the single
woman,
super
helpful,
who still struggles with worry. And no matter, I think, the volume, like she talks about, just turning the volume down, whatever your volume is currently set at, I think we could all stand to turn it down. So I would love for you to listen in to this conversation about anxiety in our girls with Sissy Goff.
Sissy, welcome back to the Famous at Home podcast.
Oh, I'm always so glad to be with you guys. I just wish we were sitting around the table having dinner.
I know. Well, we need to make that happen very soon.
We do.
And yeah. Since you were last on, we were in this together. Now we're the Famous at Home podcast because we're helping people be famous at home so they can thrive on their stage. And
I love that.
So often, so last time we had you on, I think it was about a year ago, we were at Daystar, and yeah. You were reading you had just finished reading 23 books on anxiety. And
yes.
Which was...
I was twitching myself.
It was really, really impressive. And you, since then, have released a book called Raising Worry-Free Girls. And
yes.
I think so often what can prevent us from showing up at home and being truly present at home is when we have a child who's just anxious and overwhelmed,
yeah.
and we're not sure what to do. We feel lost. So why did you read 23 books on anxiety, and why why this particular topic for you?
Well, you know, I mean, we've talked so many times, but I've been counseling now 27 years, I think, going on 28, pretty close. And
wow.
It really is at a point, Josh, and I think even more than last time we talked, you know, if who I see at Daystar is representative of the world, which I don't think totally it is, but really, honestly, at this point, if I see a girl come to counseling for the first time at Daystar, which is, you know, a sampling of, we have 1,700 families currently. If I see a girl under the age of 11, she's there for anxiety. I mean, it's just so
wow.
rampant. And it's 1 in 4 kids, but girls are twice as likely as boys.
Why is that?
To deal with it.
Why is that?
You know, I think there are so many different things that we could talk about. I do think girls feel more pressure inherently than ever before. And if you were to sit here with David, I think he would say to you, he's having more conversations with boys who care less about school, if that makes sense. Like, they're less motivated than ever before.
Mm.
They're struggling in school more than ever before. Whereas girls, I'm having more conversations with even younger and younger girls about higher grades. Like, a 98 is not okay with me. I've got to be making 104. And so I think there's that. I think there's just this drive to be involved in so many different things and pressure that they feel like they have to be. I think there's, you know, such a strong pressure to please. I can't say this word again. Pressure to please for girls that's inherent in who God made them to be, really. I mean, I just think there's so much for them. And then we heap on technology and social media, and I think it just becomes obviously where mm-hmm. they feel like they're starting to crack under it.
So I'm going to just break this down for a second, because you mentioned 11 years and younger. So I don't know if it's
yes.
fair to kind of do an age gap, but we have people listening
sure.
who have different varying ages of girls. And
right.
First of all, you have the book. I want to make sure that we talk about this. We talked about it in the beginning, but we're going to talk about it as well here. Just, you wrote a book called Raising Worry-Free Girls. And then for parents, and then coming out in December 3rd, you're putting a workbook out for elementary school girls. Is that correct? Can you just
yeah,
speak to that
I
quickly?
Sure am.
I would love
yes,
to hear about
I'm
that.
Super. You know, I haven't ever written a book for kids, which I know y'all, I love your book for kids. What am I feeling? I talk about it all the time. And I haven't ever done that. And it's a blast. Did you feel that way?
Oh, it's so fun. Yeah. And then it's fun,
so
too, because
fun.
Just to hear all the stories, because you have children now reading books instead of the parent. And it's just cool to hear the stories and how the kids interact with it.
That.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, and in my counseling office, I also have my little dog helps me counsel. And so I wrote a book for elementary age girls. Really, I mean, both of these books, the intent was, I think there are some things that parents can do at home before they ever have to bring them to counseling to try, that I think could help a lot of kids where it doesn't even get to that point. And so so this book was in addition to that, and feeling like eight was the average age of onset. Now it's dropping to 6, and parents are seeing symptoms as young as 4 and 5. And so it felt like if I could put a book in the hands of these little bitty girls where they could do some things that they felt empowered to fight worry already, I think it would help them long term have tools that then will not, you know, where they won't have to be in the counselor's office necessarily. I mean, obviously, I think counseling is a great thing, but I think just empower with them with some tools where they feel stronger than their worry is the bottom line. And it's super fun. And it has places where they first learn to recognize worry in their body, and they draw it, and you know, they draw themselves defeating the worry monster. And I mean, all kinds of things like that, where it's art and it's different things for them to pull in. They write a story about it that I think will make it really fun. And my little cute dog is in a superhero cape, and I tell stories about her. She's hilarious because she's not afraid of big dogs, but she's afraid of hiccups. And, you know, I think even using things like that for kids, because I think they feel so often like something's really wrong with me. And so to hear that Lucy's afraid of something irrational like hiccups, I think can make them feel. I got a little girl in my office last week, and we were talking about it, and she was just laughing so hard, and she's just wrestling with so much fear. And for her to sit there and look at Lucy and think Lucy's in it with her, you know, it just meant so much to her.
And that's so great, because Copper is the favorite character of What Am I Feeling? So dogs are always a great character. I love it. So what are we doing? Or let's go chronologically here. You're mentioning as early as 4 and 5 and then 6 and you're seeing onset. One of the things that we often hear from parents, particularly moms, is I feel like I'm messing up all the time. I feel like I don't know if I'm ever getting anything right. Are we doing something inherently wrong? Like you mentioned the you know, the sense of pleasing, the God-given like sense in girls to please. Yeah. But is there something that we can do? Are we doing something wrong as parents early on with our daughters? Is there something we should be doing differently? Why is it almost more epidemic? Well, it is epidemic. Why is it epidemic today? And why is it getting younger and younger? Is it something we're doing wrong?
Well, there definitely is a genetic component. So without any parenting entering in, even if as a parent you have anxiety, your child is 7 times more likely to have it themselves. Hmm. And so that's just in our DNA. And then because God wired girls for a relationship, I mean, girls have this desire to connect, which ripples over into the desire to please. I think that's going to happen too. But I will say I am seeing a lot of parents. You know, I think we grew up with a lot of us, you're so much younger than I am, Josh, but we grew up with parents.
Careful, I'm not that much younger.
our parents didn't talk a lot about emotions. And so what I'm seeing more and more of are parents who didn't feel like their parents understood what was going on with them. And I think they were likely grappling with anxiety themselves. And so now they're doing what every parent would do and trying to really understand. And then what's happening often is, in my research, one of the things I read are that the two most common parenting strategies with kids with anxiety are escape and avoidance, which totally makes sense. Your child's afraid, and so you want to take away the thing that's making them afraid. But what research says is that for them to work through the anxiety, they basically have to do the scary thing. And I think as a parent, you just don't know how to help. And that's really part of the purpose behind both the books, is to say, here's a really practical guide map to help them work through the scary things so that they feel like they can. The bottom line definition I came up with in the book for anxiety is that anxiety is an overestimation of the problem and an underestimation of herself. And so if you pull her out of the thing, that makes the problem bigger and her smaller, rather than, I'm going to help you figure it out because you are bigger than your worry, or you're bigger than this thing that you're stuck looping, which is how I talk about it with girls, looping about.
Helping our girls realize that they're bigger than the worry. And that is so good. So I want to ask, so helping them do, so our default, I'm just going to repeat this. Our default is to do escape and avoidance.
Yes.
And just pretend it doesn't exist. And that could be generational, right? Like, because our parents didn't talk to us about it.
Right. Exactly. And not on purpose. I mean, again, I want to keep saying it's so well-meaning parents that are ending up doing that.
Yes, that's a huge point. Absolutely. Because everybody we talk to, the parents I talk to, they're super well-meaning, and they want to do something. They just want to do what's right.
They love their kids so much. Yeah.
And we live in a culture too, I think culturally speaking, and you can speak to this, that we are in this like overwhelming, like almost like overprotective. Like you're saying the antidote is to help with anxiety is we need to help our girls work through the scary things.
Yes, absolutely. And that all children long to be independent. And so, and it helps them feel more capable when they are.
So, but in an overprotective culture, we don't want to expose our girls. There's that of escape and avoidance. We don't want to expose them. So we'll call the teachers. Yes. We'll take care of the problems for them. We'll do that type of thing.
Right, exactly.
So helping them work through the scary thing. Can you give us an example of what that might look like For say an early child, because I'm thinking chronologically here, I'm thinking our daughter's five, right? And so in that age group, for parents who are listening, who have that, you know, maybe, you know, 5 to 8 year old daughter who, how do they push through that scary thing? Kennedy's learning how to ride a bike without training wheels right now. So I'm pushing her that's through that awesome. Scary thing.
Go, Kennedy, that's so good. Yeah, well, and this, you know, all this, Josh, but I mean, there are a few common things that I hear from parents of elementary age girls that the kids are looping on. One of them is obviously something bad happening to their parents or being separated from their parents. Another is throwing up. I have so many girls at Daystar who are there just because they threw up once. And now anytime anything's even off or someone looks sick at school, they are so fearful they're going to throw up, or even sleeping in their own bed. Going upstairs by themselves. And so that's an easy one. Like sleeping in their own bed is an easy one to conceptualize. So say your child has been in your bed now for a couple of months because they're so afraid, that what you do is you end up putting a mattress on the floor beside your bed. And when they sleep in the mattress 5 nights, not 5 nights in a row, because that ends up creating more pressure, but 5 nights together, then you give them some kind of little reward that you created ahead of time. This is called exposure therapy. And so then you move them out into the hall on the mattress, and then you move them a little farther on the mattress, and you're rewarding along the way, because that's creating more buy-in for them, because they need to be a part of the process, not just you telling them what they're doing. So like even the incentives you come up with ahead of time for them so that there's more buy-in. And then they eventually end up in their room, and then they get the big reward when they do 5 nights there, you know.
That is so helpful, because sleeping is one of the biggest issues we hear at nighttime.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I have a whole page dedicated in the book to different practical exercises that can help kids when they're falling asleep.
Okay, so Sissy, so we're talking about younger girls, but if we move up the ladder sort of chronologically, and they move out of, maybe it's not so much fear of sleeping alone, or, you know, what's happening to mom and dad, if, you know, if something bad happens, what happens, like you talked about grades being so important to girls. Why is that so important? Is that maybe the next stage as we move into, like, you know, those preteen years?
Yes. I would say it starts to be preteen, definitely teenager.
Okay.
Is where I see girls stuck. But yeah, I mean, I sat with a girl last night who is a sixth grader, and she is so focused on grades. I'm grateful that her mom's on board with me, because I said to her, I want you to spend less time on homework. I want you to let go of the hundreds, like really spend 30 minutes less than you would spend normally on homework. And then I want you to see if you're still making the grades, because she was spending like 3.5 hours as a sixth grader.
Wow.
And thankfully her mom was okay with it. And last night she said to me, my grades are just as good, I figured out, which is kind of what we would know to be true. She just was obsessing and working harder and longer, whereas she could have worked harder and smarter.
Where do you think this emphasis has come in, that like grades are so important this young?
You know, it seems like the ways girls are defining themselves now, that there are a lot of girls who are really defining themselves as wanting to pursue excellence in all things. And I think that's part of it. But I think also we're just so skewed towards, you know, I have kids literally who lean this way with their anxiety that will say to me as a seventh grader, well, if I don't do well now, then I'm not going to do well in high school. I'm not going to get into the right high school. Then I'm not going to get into the right college. And then my life's just going to be a mess. Wow. I mean, I've heard that statement 5 times in the last year, which feels crazy.
Is this something like, are they picking this up from, again, we're speaking with such love, like us as parents, yes. I don't think we realize how much they absorb, you know, are they picking this up from us? Like this is the pressure we have inadvertently put on them?
You know, sometimes probably so, but I also am seeing more parents in my office. I will have a child say to me, my parents want me to make straight A's, and they get upset with me if I don't. And then I'll have the parents come up, and the parents will say, actually, we could care less about her grades. She's putting that on herself. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think, whereas I used to feel like parents really did genuinely put more pressure, maybe when we were growing up, but I think the girls who put pressure on themselves put pressure on themselves, and they become women who put pressure on themselves, you know, and we could talk about Enneagram even in terms of that, but I think that's it's part of it. And that's the little girl's book I called Braver, Stronger, Smarter after that Pooh quote. And one of the things that I tell girls the first time in my office that are struggling with anxiety is I'll say, every girl I ever meet who worries, it's because she's really smart and she's conscientious and she tries hard and things matter to her. And she just has a hard time turning the volume down. Mm. And so I do think so much of it is inherent in our personalities. And that's why it really morphs developmentally from one thing to the next. And it's like whack-a-mole, you know, and so grades are a stop off in that process for kids who are just going to lean towards worry and anxiety.
Wow. So go back. You mentioned Enneagram. Talk about that a little bit. Are you seeing this trend? So it's a personality trait that is more tended toward anxiety?
I think it definitely can be. I mean, I think all of us who are type A have a little bottom line anxiety that we probably didn't know to call it that when we were growing up. And we just function, keeping order in our life. And so that's our coping skill that we didn't even know we were creating. And so, yeah, I think I have not seen any research on this, so I'm just speaking offhandedly, but I think so many firstborns are ones. And I think so many firstborns end up struggling with anxiety, especially if a firstborn's a girl.
You're talking to one.
I know.
And yes. It hits me. And I do feel like, in a lot of ways, like I think I handled it okay. But I would say I'm a woman today who still puts a lot of pressure on herself. And yeah. it's this message that it's just been in there since I can't remember when. And right. it's like to think of doing it less than that is like, what? Yeah. Like, that's not even okay. Yeah. And this is the message we need to hear. It's okay.
Right. It's okay.
And this is the message we need to pass on to our daughters. Because like when you said that, my heart sank. Because it's one thing to say to a little girl, right, and to see their struggles. Mm-hmm. You realize this is a young woman who's going to turn into likely a wife and a mom one day, who's still going to put pressure on herself. And I think that's what burdens me. Like, this is a lifetime we're setting these girls up for.
I know.
And that, I think I've walked it by the grace of God. I don't think I've experienced sort of some of the extremes of it, but it's still there. All the undercurrents are still there. And to be able to give our kids coping, like as you're talking about being braver, stronger, smarter, like let's go like spiritually. How do we bring God into this? Because if we're raising kids to understand that they serve a big God that's so much bigger than the smallness of our performance or our behavior or our outcome and our worrisome thoughts, like how do we tie that in with our girls?
Well, I would probably say a couple of different ways, because I think with what you're saying, Christy, and just that whole idea of that girls, that we've talked about before on your podcast about how when something goes wrong in a boy's world, he blames someone else, likely his mom, and a girl blames herself. Hmm. And I think in that perfectionistic, hard on herself piece, I mean, I did spiritual direction for about a year and a half. And the thing that my spiritual director said more than anything else was, you have got to give yourself grace. And I think for that to be a message to communicate over girls who struggle with being hard on themselves, not just give yourself grace, but God gives you so much grace. He knows that you mess up. He loves you and delights in you in the middle of that. It's okay. He's not worried. He's not thrown off by that. But that's just messaging we keep going back over and over to with her, I think, is really important. From a perfectionist little girl standpoint. And then I would say from a fear standpoint, I think for them to know that God is so much bigger than whatever it is they're afraid of. And he's in the middle of that too. And he's gone before them and he's going to protect them. All of those things feel like such important truths that we need to be conveying to them.
First of all, Christy's wigging out over here because you did a year and a half of spiritual direction. And
I want to ask every question we could talk for days. I want to.
Josh, so stay tuned for Spiritual Direction episode with Sissy Goff and Christy Stroud.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And just so everyone who's listening knows, we have to share a mic when we do, when we're doing an interview, Josh and I. So that's why you'll often, when Josh's face is in front of the mic, I'm like sitting over here like, oh, you're smart. I want to. But if we move it back and forth too much, you can hear the like creaking back and forth. So we have to like leave it still. I really want to talk about this, but that's a whole other. Oh, I'm so excited.
You just.
So fun.
So there's so much I can talk about that. First of all, I can talk about my Enneagram 1 wife, who's a firstborn. Yeah. And yeah. And then you and David.
And there are, I know that we're all in it together. I love it. But there are other numbers that struggle with anxiety. So I don't want to pigeonhole it just
one. Sissy,
thing,
I'm a six, okay? And I'm a firstborn. So I'm a scared little boy.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if I've ever told you that my sister's a six, and she talked to somebody who said that sixes are a lot like ducks, where you just glide along the surface and look so effortless, and underneath your little legs are like
battling. Oh my goodness. That's have you heard that great, before? No, but that's an amazing illustration, because that's the way
Isn't
that I
it?
Feel. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, and look to people.
Well, and but at the same time too, like I have to be incredibly aware of this raising a daughter, because, okay, so as we talk about shepherding their hearts, and we talk about discipling our kids, and we talk about just helping them learn how to manage their anxiety, as you talked about exposure therapy earlier, there's two pieces of this that I want to point out that you write about. The first one is, the first one is this. Hold on, I'm trying to figure out which direction I want to go here. Let me start it with this one. It typically takes 3 weeks to establish new behavior.
Yeah.
One of the things that I talk about often is, you know, when Paul writes in Romans to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that there's a neurobiological component to that. That
Definitely.
We have to be, that there's a transforming that takes place. And I'm speaking to myself. I'm not speaking to my daughter. Like, so yeah. For me as an Enneagram 6, for me as someone who struggles with that fear and my little feet pedaling, I love that illustration. Mm. I have to be able to show up for my daughter in a way that isn't making it look like I'm struck. Like, I want to show her faith, not fear. And I want to live that out for her.
Yeah.
And so I have to be on my own guard as it relates to how I'm showing up for her, and allowing her then to, then giving her that grace. And because the thing you write next is, this is why I was struggling with the order I wanted to go in, was include celebrations as part of the rewards.
Yeah.
And I think so often, grace and celebration, celebrating an accomplishment, whether it's us or whether it's our daughters, celebrating an accomplishment is giving ourselves grace. And I think so often we get so busy and we run from thing to thing that we miss celebrating. Celebrate was one of the core decisions of being famous at home. And I think that celebration is so critical to just relaxing, giving our kids a movie night when they've done something awesome, taking the pressure off to not feel like they have to finish their homework that night, whatever that looks like. And so I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm the one doing the talking here, because this is you, but I want to throw that back to you, because I feel like I have to be, as a parent, how I'm showing up matters, especially as it relates to how I'm shepherding her heart.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Today's episode is brought to you by the What Am I Feeling children's book.
In a world where our kids are dealing with a lot of things inside a little body, big emotions that come from sibling rivalry or maybe even bullying, there's divorce, some are dealing with tragedy or watching tragedy on the news, What Am I Feeling offers a biblically grounded way for our kids to learn to manage really big feelings and start to develop empathy for others.
That's right. The book is centered around Sam going to school, and it is show and tell day at school, and Sam is feeling a little flippy in his tummy, and these emotions are feelings that our kids have on a regular basis. Now that school is back in session, it is an opportunity for you to walk with your child through what they are feeling.
Check out whatamifeelingbook.com. That's whatamifeelingbook.com.
So let me go to, and we kind of bounced all over the place, but we're going chronologically. So we're speaking of,
there's just so much we want to talk
know.
About.
We're speaking of like preteen, teenage years, and maybe even elementary years, depending on when a girl gets a phone. But how has technology played a role in this? And what are practical things that parents who are listening can do to manage screen time, to make sure that screen time isn't an issue? Well, it's going to be an issue, but as it relates to feeding the anxiety.
Yeah, it's definitely a contributing issue. And part of that is that what a psychiatrist said to me once is that when a child is looking at a phone, they're being bombarded by all these images and different things, different stimulus for their brain, really. And it almost puts them in a state where their amygdala is driving, like this very agitated state. And then kids, a lot of kids haven't learned or are too young really to know how to calm their brains back down. And so they stay in this place. And so it keeps them revved up in a way that keeps them pretty anxious. And so that's a part of it for younger ones. And then I would say older, I think social media is such a contributor to it. And I talk about Snapchat streaks in the book, just which is one like tiny factor of social media, but it's one that I think is creating a lot more anxiety in girls. And, you know, in a week, it'll be another factor of social media that's doing that. But there's just so much pressure, I think, with that to maintain contact with people and to be accessible and to be responsive when they have 3 hours of homework and an hour of soccer and 30 minutes of piano practice. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like. It was all I could do my homework, eat dinner. I wasn't even that involved in sports, you know, and then I talked on the phone for 20 minutes to a friend and went to bed. But I think there's so much riding on them. And so I think all those things add to the pressure they're feeling in terms of social media and technology.
Well, it's amazing just hearing you like say it and talk about it. Like I start to absorb the anxiety. Like I feel, I mean, even as adult women, I mean, we get on social media. I feel that amygdala in overdrive where you're just like, and you get off and you certainly don't feel better. You feel
that's so true.
Worse. But at the same time, we, you know, there's this weird pull back to it. But so tell, like, how as parents, like I hear so much in what you just said was a lot of like expectation, but also like in good things, but like sports, music, you know, homework, how can we help them and set them up for a life that's less anxious? Like that's just less, is it less full? Is it like, what practically do you think we can do to structure, maybe if that's a better way to say it, their life that helps them, that doesn't harm them?
I know a lot of families who I think are being really smart about how to kind of pull back, because really your child could be involved in easily in five different things per season of life. You know, fall, there could be five things, winter, spring, all of that. And I have a lot of families who will have, especially with multiple children, one child can do one thing each season. And I think that creates more space for those kids and creates more time. I mean, your children need time where they're sitting looking at your face at the dinner table, that nobody's hurrying off to a practice or a game or a lesson or something like that. And so, and I remember a girl saying to me who was dealing with some anxiety, she said, I had to ask my mom to stop scheduling activities for me because it was too much. Wow. And I think they so often don't know that and don't know that that's creating more anxiety in them. But then, you know, on the flip side, I talked to a mom yesterday who said, there's this sweet spot for my daughter where I can tell when she hits too many activities because she starts melting down more. But also if she's bored, her brain spins too much and she actually gets more anxious. And so I think that's probably so important with each of your kids, to be a good student of what's the line, and not only student, but have conversations with them to say, okay, I've heard that sometimes it can make people more anxious if they don't have enough going on. It can make them make them anxious if they have too much. What do you think is your sweet spot? And then obviously they're not totally driving the bus on that. You're going to make the ultimate decision. But I think just paying attention to those things is so important for kids to create more balance. And then I talk about, you know, I think we probably all love Dan Siegel, but in the book, I talk about that healthy mind platter of the different components of what balance looks like.
And that Daniel Siegel book that you're referring to was that The Whole Brain Child?
Yes.
Yeah. Such a great read. Yeah.
And it's a great read.
We do that with our kids. Like we have one event per season that they're allowed to be a part of. And it's so interesting because our children actually will either, you know, when we're going, maybe it's out with friends and it's like kind of, you hit a busy weekend and you're back to back to back to back. And when your kids are in school on top of that, our son in particular, he'll tell us, I just want to be home. I don't want to go to another thing. And, you know, he's seven, but I think a lot of times he can speak up for himself. Our daughter doesn't. So I'm beginning to pay attention. Last night we were out and I can begin to pay attention when it's too much for her, but she isn't able to voice it. Or she, I don't know that she knows how to.
And that may be that pleasing thing. I mean, it could be both. She may not know how, or it may be that she thinks she's going to disappoint you all somehow.
Yeah. And that is her. So that's in that. But again, as you said, being a student of our children is so critical, and paying attention to how they navigate the world around them. And because at the same time too, our kids will complain if they want to go to a if it is a practice or something. And but it's like, no, you have to do this practice because this is good for you. And then at the end of practice, it was like, this is the best thing ever. This was the best night ever, you know? And so it's like I describe it as the support challenge continuum. At what point do they need support? And then, you know, to push them into that challenge and walk them through that scary thing or that thing they don't want to do or whatever that looks like. I think that's so, so important. So, Sissy, first of all, thank you so much again for the time that you've given to us over and over and over again on the podcast, because you and David are like two of the top listening podcast episodes throughout the history of our podcast. So,
I just love getting to talk to y'all. It's a great excuse to get to have a conversation.
Well, we love it. And I'm going to leave you with the parting word of encouragement to parents today for their girls. What will you impart to them to encourage them as they go spend time with their daughters today?
You know, I should have called y'all. Y'all should have gone with us, but our staff went to hear Dean Allender speak not too long ago.
Oh, I would have liked that.
And it was awesome. And one of the things he talked about that I think it had never occurred to me in quite this concrete of a way, but he said, your children are one of the only relationships, however many children you have, that you don't get to pick. And so obviously that means somebody else picked those kids for you that knew that you needed that child and that child needed you.
Wow.
And I think in that means whoever your child is, however anxious they are, however anxious you are, whatever's going on, however much they trigger you and push your buttons, God picked you for them, and he gave you through him everything you need for that child. And so you can do it, and they can too. And that's the message we want to keep communicating to them.
Mic drop. I have tears in my eyes, but it's I don't think you can hear that enough, you know, because you just run up against so many walls, I think. And it feels like, it's like, this is just so difficult or hard, or they're difficult, you know, or we don't mesh or gel. And we hear this all the time. There's so much, it's like, you know, two boulders that just keep rolling into one another. And it's like, this is for our good, actually.
Yeah,
you know, this is a gift for our good. And thank you. We love you guys so much. Thank you for
your
insight and your wisdom. And there is something about, I would just say, like, to the parent who's struggling, do not feel alone and reach out for help. There are people like Sissy or David, if it's a son, who are not just experts and who can, you know, help guide your child. They have compassion for where you're at. They have words of encouragement and wisdom. Like, we're not stuck where we are. And often, just as we're trying to tell our girls, the problem isn't as big as we think. It feels overwhelming to us. And then you get, you know, just an outside word of wisdom and encouragement or insight, and you're like, oh, it just puts a whole different spin on it. Like, and I think we all feel less of a victim because we realize we really are braver, stronger, and smarter than maybe we think. And the same is true for our kids. So, Sissy, we love you. Thank you.
I love you guys. Yeah.
We love you as well. And we'll put these books in the show notes. Check out the new workbook for girls, elementary school age girls. And can't wait to hear how Lucy shows up for those girls in the book. And we'll put those in the show notes. And until next week, remember that the greatest red carpet you'll ever walk is through your front door.
You are famous at home. We love you.
Thank you for listening to the Famous at Home podcast. If anything we said today hit home with you, or resonated in such a way you want to share it with others, go find us on Instagram at Famous at Home and comment, share, tell others about today's episode.
We'd also love if you would leave us a review. Reviews mean so much to us, and they also help other people find out about the podcast. So if you could leave us a review, we would appreciate it.
You can also visit famousathome.com/podcast to submit a question or topic for a future episode.
And for coaching or speaking inquiries for your family or your organization, visit famousathome.com. We would love to serve you.
Because the greatest red carpet you'll ever walk is through your front door.